Welcome back to the Crossover Podcast, the show where we get comics, pop culture, and sports, and get ready for a little pop culture, as we're going to be talking Avatar, The Last Airbender, not the James Cameron stuff, and we're also not going to be talking about the Nickelodeon series. We're going to be rather talking about the new live-action Netflix series that came out a week and a bit ago on Netflix. I'm your host, as always, Matt Pearson. Joining me today is Kevin Miller. How the heck are you, Kev?
Hey, not bad. Happy to be back.
Yeah, good to have you. When was the last time you were on? I think it was for Guardians 3, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I still have not quite seen the Marvels.
Well, you're going to be back on... Oh, God, the Marvels is fine. It's fine. It's the definition of mid, in my opinion, Kevin. Honestly.
It's fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's the... It's the definition of mid, the Marvels, and I'm not sure, did we do... Yeah, I did Marvels with Rob on this one, and I basically said the same thing. I'm like, it's mid, bad guys, like a nothing burger, but it's fun to see the three girls a lot of the time doing their thing, and that's that's kind of it. The Marvels, I haven't revisited that yet since it's been on Netflix, on the Plus. But I will, I'll actually revisit that one. I just haven't deigned to do so yet, unlike some of the new ones. And we're going to get you back on soon, because against my better judgment, I will be watching Deadpool 1 and 2 in anticipation for Deadpool and Wolverine, because I will be going to see it. I don't like it, but I love me some Hugh Jackman Wolverine, man, and I love it enough that I'm gonna deign to go see.
You're willing to pay like 9 hours of toll for that?
Probably not all at once. I think so. So what we might do, because when does Deadpool 3 actually release? That's not for a bit, right?
I have no idea. Honestly, it's not on my radar.
Let me take a peek. So, Deadpool 3 release date. Oh, that's not for July, so we got a little bit. So, we're covered for the next couple of weeks as far as content. If you're wondering what we got coming up, because we've been taking a break since football ended, so we took a 2 or 3 weeks off there. We're back now with Netflix Avatar. Craig and I will be back over the next couple of weeks because baseball is starting up, so we'll be doing our annual National League and American League win totals pod, one of my favorite pods of the week, as we are gearing up for what might be, Kevin, one of the most toxic Blue Jay seasons of all time, despite the fact it's just the fan base is just rife. It's so difficult to explain, because I know you like the Jays, but you're not a hardcore watcher from day to day.
Yeah.
It's just so it's last season they made the playoffs, but it was like every game, whether they won or lost, was like dreadful to watch. Like, it wasn't a fun experience even when they won. It was one of those seasons, right? You know, like they'd win, but it would always be despite themselves and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. It was not fun. And it looks like it might get even sort of worse this year, but that's a story for another pod. So I might deign to one at a time watch the Deadpool movies, and if I feel like it, I might get like you and Rob to come on and be like, yeah, I mean, I guess this was a thing.
July is the month where I'm likely to have the amount of time able to do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting for sure.
Yeah. Well, we might do it on the lead up, because I don't know if I want to consume that much Deadpool in 1 month. Maybe I do. Maybe I do. maybe 1 month I do Deadpool 1, and then the next month I need Deadpool 2, because just wow. And this is coming from a guy who is blocked by Rob Liefeld on Twitter. but anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the live action Airbender that aired last week. Mixed reviews, I would say, for this one. It's sitting at about, I'm trying to find out, it's sitting at like a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, and yeah, obviously Rotten Tomatoes is not not the be all end all. There's plenty of ways to frig up that score, but it definitely seems tepid at best. This live action version.
I'm seeing a lot of people having like the same things that they love and the same things that they don't love. Honestly, and so it does feel very mixed. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we can get into it, but...
Yeah, but before we get into the Netflix, let's establish our Avatar bona fides. We should say that we are both men in our mid-30s. So, Avatar was not a... Well, it was not a Saturday morning... it was that we did not do the Saturday morning experience with Avatar. When we watched Avatar, it was kind of on DVDs in the our like early to mid 20s, like, you know, 10 or so years ago. It's actually been a while since that was out. So like we didn't really do the Saturday morning. So for the generation that's below us, maybe not a full generation, but you know what I'm saying. Who did the Saturday morning? A lot of them, this is their Batman animated series, right? Like the way I talk and think and reminisce about the Batman animated series, they feel the same way about Avatar: The Last Airbender. I think it is one of the most well-written shows of all time that can appeal to any and all ages, any and all races and creeds. It's such an ethnically diverse cast, which is insane considering it was done by like all white dudes behind the scenes, so it's kind of amazing that they were able to get away with it at the time, because you definitely couldn't get a bunch of white dudes doing this in 2024. But I mean, I love it. So because I don't have that Saturday morning experience, I don't think I'm going to be as harsh on this Netflix series as I've seen, because I've only listened to two podcasts about it that reviewed it, and the two podcasts basically ripped it to smithereens. I gotta say, Netflix has already renewed it for seasons 2 and 3, which just the perfect formula for Netflix, you know, a streaming service that never wants to go beyond 3 seasons, so it's perfect for them, right?
Yeah.
I didn't hate this. I liked it. There was stuff I dug and there was stuff I didn't dig, but I honestly felt that the good outweighed the bad. I think I would review this more favorably than most. Maybe I'm getting soft at my older age, Kev, but and maybe I just want to kind of see cool stuff happen. But I remember going Avatar, the M. Night Shyamalan Avatar movie, released on Canada Day up here in like 2013, 2014. Yeah, well, I want to say it was like 20. Well, yeah, maybe it was 2010. Anyway, that's not the point. But it released on Canada Day, and my wife, who really liked this live action adaptation, is a huge fan of Avatar. We went to go see Canada Day is like her favorite day of the year, and so my big plan was to, you know, we're gonna go see Avatar. Hopefully, it's D's. And then we'll go watch fireworks and stuff later.
Right?
And, you know, obviously the M. Night Shyamalan was a tragic. It was absolutely tragic. And I've always held to the creed that even if you're watching like the worst piece of garbage movie you've ever seen in your life, if you can't find at least one thing that you like about it, you're probably a pretty miserable SOB, but I watched that Avatar Last Air, that M. Night Shyamalan, and I struggle to be like, what's something I could say nice about this movie? And I guess it like kind of peaked, like, because I mean, like that movie peaked like 5 seconds in when they did the television show intro, but that still looked like the bad red screen from the like old animated Lord of the Rings movies from the 70s, right? Except it was like 40 years later. Yeah, rotoscope. So, yeah, that's what it's called, rotoscope. Well played.
Say, when we're establishing our bona fides, like,
yeah,
you're right, we weren't the kids watching this with our, you know, Fruity Pebbles on Saturday morning, but you know, the show started in 2005. We were in our second year of college by then. I watched a lot of it. I think the first episode I saw was on television, because I was still watching television at the time. Remember that?
Yeah.
I think the first episode I saw was like the first episode of season 2, and that does so much to be like, oh, there's a lot of cool stuff in this episode. I want to go back and figure out what's going on here, and, you know, watch the first season. And at that time, I know that there were only episodes out until like maybe 3/4 of the way of season 2. So I was at that point literally watching not quite Saturday morning, but I was watching week to week for the remainder of season two, and then a long break, and then season three finally. And then you're right, in 2010 I'm like, oh boy, live action movie, and you know, they put together an interesting trailer for it that, you know, got my hopes up. And then you know, maybe I was young enough in 2010 to feel personally affronted and enraged by it.
Oh, it's bad.
I still maintain it's the worst movie I've ever seen, but I also say that with the caveat that it's near and dear to my heart, and so it felt like a personal affront, you know? Because there are definitely, I've seen worse movies, but I didn't take it as personally as I took that one.
Yeah, because it was also stuff like I don't know, M. Night just didn't get stuff, and I don't want to get into his whole
thing. Well, and we were already like 6 or 7 years into M. Night's got like one or two big hits, and every other thing he's done since then has been worse. And yeah. So, you know, like I said, you put together a cool trailer for a movie that's got lots of live action bending and characters you recognize and stuff like that, and you're like, hell yeah, but then you're like, oh, M. Night Shyamalan, huh?
Yeah, and the one of the, when it, we had not yet established the Medellin corollary out there, which, if this is your first time listening,
young, we were full of hope.
Yeah, which if this is your first time listening to this pod, the Medellin corollary is something we came up with on this show, where it basically states that no matter how bad a movie is, you can cut a trailer to it that makes it look like the greatest movie that you've ever seen, right? Which, yeah. I don't know if you saw that Fallout trailer for the Amazon Prime series based on the video game that I haven't played, that was a hell of a trailer. I was like, I am gonna check out that show. I won't get any of the inside references, but we'll see.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Well, Walton Goggins, who I think is going to end up being the Kevin Bacon of this generation. It's going to be. I'm telling you, it's going to be 6 degrees of Walton Goggins before it's all said and done, man. All right. The live action Airbender show. I would say if I were to give you I'm at like a 7.657, which you know, kind of puts me in line with a little bit above the but not, you know, going crazy above what seems to be the consensus score. A lot of the aggregate score of this seems to be like, you know, like a 6 out of 10. The two podcasts I listened to that reviewed this, I'm telling you, they tore it to absolute pieces. Yeah, you know, like I was hearing like 2s out of 10 and 3s out of 10, which I think is too far. I think it's too far. I think this was fine. I think it was a fun watch. I don't want to take the show to task on what I think was the weakest part of the show, which is the cringe child acting that occurs throughout the shows. But I don't want it to take it to task on that, because again, it's freaking kids. But I think it's a well cast show in terms of the look of the characters. Yeah. I think it's a well designed show in terms of the costumes. I thought the costumes looked gorgeous throughout this thing. I know some people were ripping on them saying it looked
the best part.
Yeah, I thought people were ripping on it saying they look too much like cosplay, and I'm like, what do you want them to look like then? Like, what do you even mean by that when they look too much like cosplay?
Here's what I'll say. We're talking about like general ratings and stuff like that, because I'm with you. I think I fall at around a 7 on this.
Yeah.
But it's super uneven. Like, if you want to break it, like the whole season, you could say like, yeah, it's a 7. All right, you know, and that seems fine. But like, you know, depending on the episode, it could be a 6 or it could be an 8. And then depending on the scene, like there are some scenes I could see being rated as a 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are some scenes I could see rated as like a 9 or a 10. Like there are, it's super uneven. The costuming and the, you know, the people saying it looks like a cosplay and all that, like, it really does feel like there are some things they decided to give more attention to than others, because there are a couple costumes that do stand out as, you know, not I mean, I'm not going to say that they're bad, but they're not up to the same level of everything else in the show.
Ooh, lay them on me. Which ones do you think were less than satisfactory?
I'm going to get deep cut on this a little bit.
Okay.
Because there are some, and I mean, this is indicative of my major issue with this show also. Like, if I could boil down the beef that I have with this adaptation, it is that they change things, and I'm okay with them changing things. You have to. I get it. Yeah. But some of the things they change, they make needlessly complicated for no good reason.
Well, what's an example?
Okay, so in the animated series, we can skip right to the end. When we were in the animated series, there
is... I should say spoiler alert. I guess I never technically said spoiler alert, but I can't imagine that you were listening to this.
Spoiler alert for this 2-week-old show and also the
a nearly 20-year-old show. Yeah, yeah. Proceed, Kevin. Sorry. Yeah.
No, of course. At the end, we basically get the explanation about how the ocean and moon spirit, there's only one day a year that they can take physical form, and the form that they take is different every year, and you need a special spirit killing knife that Avatar Kurik used, 600 years ago, and with all of these things combined, you can kill a fish.
You
explained why? Because that all seems really convoluted when in the original, they know that the spirits came over from the beginning to basically live in the mortal world. It's explained with as simple an explanation as that. Like, literally that sentence, the ocean and moon spirits came over in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They know that they're fish that exist in the spirit oasis at the North Pole. Zhao kills it by firebending at it, because the whole point is that it's immortal, and that it is amortal, I should say, and that you can just kill it like that. You don't need a special knife, you don't need to find them the one day a year when its glowing red weak spot appears. And so it's a change that they made where I feel like they could have just kept the way it was originally and saved themselves a lot of convoluted explanation. And to bring this back to the costume conversation, they also introduced Azula early in this season.
Yes.
And her costuming was fine, but what she came with was a Mei and Ty Lee who literally just stood around and watched her.
Yeah. I bumped into that a little bit, yeah. Yeah, they just kind of stood next to her, gassing her up, and I'm like, that's not really. I bumped into that. I also... I don't...
And it feels unearned at that point, right?
Like, yeah.
By the time Mei and Ty Lee are introduced in the series, it is after Azula is introduced at the, basically PS scene of season one, but also the beginning of season two. The first scene we see Azula in, she is blending blue fire and lightning, so we're immediately like, holy shit, what's this girl? And she establishes how badass she is at the beginning, and then she forms a team, and we're like, oh shit, well, if she's forming a team, they've got to be badass too. And we see stuff that happens with them almost immediately in the Return to Amashu episode, where, okay, one of them is throwing knives, so she's a non-bender, and she's as deadly, if not more so, than like a Sokka. And the other one is doing chi blocking, a thing that we've never seen before. And, she's impossible to hit in a fight because she's so agile. And, she can basically disable a bender in a way that we've never known to be possible before. And here, the introduction of these characters is they're sidekicks to a character who hasn't even established her own cred. And they're just literally just, you're right, gassing her up. Like, they stand around and they emote. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, and I don't want to take anything away from Elizabeth Yu, because I thought the performance that she had as Azula was decent.
Yeah.
But she just didn't look mean enough, you know? Like, I'm looking at her, and she kind of reminds me I said this to my wife when I watched it, she kind of reminded me of a young Maisie Williams as Arya. Like, just the look of her, I'm like, man, she just reminds me so much of Arya from Game of Thrones. So I'm just like, I had trouble buying her as, like, the deadly Princess Azula, really. Because you got to have a real, like, You gotta have someone who can really bring the mean if you're gonna play that character, and I just it's tough.
We got a little bit of it at the end, like some of the bending she was doing, where we see some blue fire, we see some the lightning mm-hmm. bending at the end, like that, and to have that kind of go unexplained for the time being, I think is cool. So I know they got the chops, and so when I say and when you say that there's issues and there's like uneven acting because of child actors, like,
yeah,
my hope is that, like many TV shows, they listen to some criticism, they understand what they need to sort of take away and develop, because, you know, we're going to be getting these same characters, these same actors, presumably, in season two, and it can only go uphill from here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One hope.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. Like I said, I think it's an extremely well cast show. It was tough because I think you're right, and I agree with you that you get kind of like there's a bit of like, because there's a bit of cringe acting, because it's a lot of kids, you get kind of emotional whiplash watching this show, because some of the scenes they get there, and some of the other scenes they just don't, right? Like the kid, like Dallas Liu, who plays Prince Zuko, he gets there in some scenes. He gets there.
Zuko, he's doing it very well.
Yeah, he gets there, and in other scenes, it's like, because you know, there's the thing that's been memed to death where he goes, "They ran," or whatever, right? And it was like, he ran. Yeah, that was it. He ran, and it was like, oh no, right?
No, but that's season one Zuko. He's a brat, 100%. Like,
yeah,
I'm here for that, 100%.
Yeah, but like some of the emotional scenes that they give Zuko, though, he does get there, and some of them he doesn't quite get there, you
absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely. I mean, we can even talk good stuff, honestly. Like, mm-hmm. if you were to make a supercut of just the Dallas Liu Zuko and Paul Sun Young Lee Iroh
yeah.
scenes, that yeah. is the, like, whenever those two are on screen, you know it's going to be a good scene.
Yeah, those are pretty good.
It is 100. They are 100% the shining stars of this season for me.
Yeah, because people were taking random clips, because I mean, obviously this is just what the internet does, is whenever you're trying to prove a point, you take like one random clip and then show it, and it's like, oh, this is why this is a complete piece of shit. They didn't get it. They didn't get it based on this one isolated clip, right?
Yeah.
And one of them was like, there's the opening scene when we see Aang, and it's 100 years, and it's before he gets frozen, right? So all the airbenders are there, he's at the Northern Air Temple, and he's like, they're like, oh man, he's flying with it. Like, people took that clip of him being on top of the building and then floating down, and they were like, he's flying without his glider, and it's like, what are you doing? And it's like, if you actually watch that scene, he's not. He just sees he's airbending to slow his descent from the top building to the not-so-small-tall building to the next not-so-tall building, and so on and so on until he gets to the ground. So people took that one isolated clip and were like, what the fuck is this shit? Ah, they don't get it. And I'm like, well, let's just wait and watch it. And then you watch that clip, and they didn't really get it. And then that bore out to just not be true, right? They were just, like, they took that clip completely out of context and didn't even, you know, use it properly to make their point, because it ended up being not true. Aang has his glider in this show and does not fly. But one clip that people did take and was like, this is the ruining my childhood moment was the scene, and I do agree with him to a point. I'm not as harsh as him on this, but I did bump into this a little bit when I was watching it. But the Fire Lord Ozai scene when Zuko has to fight him because he disgraced him in his temple, they missed the mark on that. They missed the mark on that scene a little bit, right? Because like Zuko starts fighting back. Daniel Dai Kim, who I did love as Fire Lord Ozai, I thought he looked the part, and it's great to see him in things other than the Good Doctor memes. So I thought he looked dope and menacing as Fire Lord Ozai. I really bought that. Like, yeah, this is a guy people would be afraid of. But in that scene,
true, he is daddy.
Yeah, oh, he's zaddy, all right. He went to, like, that scene, they kind of didn't get the dynamic of those two characters, because, like, Zuko was fighting back, and Fire Lord Ozai was holding back during the fight, too, and stuff, and then it just, that scene I bumped into, and I could see, like, you know, the hardcore Last Airbender fans being like, oh, they didn't fucking get this at all. So I watched that, and I was kind of like, I got no comeback on that scene, right? Yeah, that scene I definitely bumped into for sure.
See, and that's a great example, too, because, like, there are things that they do change for the better, and I think having the sort of little Easter egg of, it's not even an Easter egg, it is literally said out loud, but, like, the idea that Zuko is speaking up about, like, the 41st Division of the new recruits that he doesn't want to just feed as cannon fodder into the Earthbender army so that the Fire Nation can win what seems to be a pretty insignificant battle, all said. You know, he basically gets banished for trying to protect them, and they end up being his crew. I thought was a change for the better.
Yeah, I thought that, because that wasn't it in that wasn't a thing that they dressed in the show, right? Like, I don't think, like, yeah, like...
No, he had a crew, but it was never really explained why.
Yeah, and now that we kind of have it, which is, that was one of those things, I agree with you, that was 100% for the better, because I don't remember, I was like, did that happen in the animated series? I don't remember that specific detail, because that's one of those things that you might not forget.
That might be one of those things that's on, like, a cutting room floor somewhere. You know, it's in the back of the heads of, you know, Brian and Mike to basically be like, oh, yeah, those are the people that... But, you know, it's never said. It's never said.
Yeah. So that, that's a fun addition, for sure. I agree with you completely.
Cool stuff like that. Like, I appreciate that they... It felt... Go with me on this comparison, because this is the vibe that I got from a lot of the season one quote-unquote filler episodes being removed. Because they mention a lot of stuff kind of offhandedly, like, oh, they said that he helps, you know, some warring tribes at a canyon somewhere and yada yada. And it felt very much like, you know, if it was a Marvel comic book, there would be, like, a little yellow box that says, like, see the, you know, the Great Divide episode, True Believers.
Yeah.
Like, you got to go back and do your homework if you want to know what that side adventure was all about.
Yeah, because my favorite episode of season one, and it might be, it legitimately might be my favorite episode of, actually, that's not true. The first appearance of Toph is my favorite one. I can't get over Mick Foley as
Blind Bandit, man.
Yeah, Mick Foley as the Boulder was just too much for me. It was too deep cut wrestling references for me not to love it. But that said, my first episode.
I'll say the first time we see the seismic earthbending, and then it ends up being a nut joke, like, just pure art.
Oh, so good. He just nut taps the Boulder, and Mick Foley just It's so good. But my favorite episode of first season might be the, and it's kind of not a filler episode. There's a little thing. It's mostly a filler episode, but it introduces stuff like Katara being able to heal with water and is it called the Deserter or whatever? It's the one where the old firebender is trying to teach Aang firebending, but he's trying to teach him that it's like, you know, firebending is a curse and stuff like that, and it turned out Zhao was his pupil before, right? That's the one where he has the fight with Zhao, and he gets Zhao to blow up his own ships because he can't fight with discipline, right? And it was Aang accidentally burns Katara's hands. There's a lot of really great character development, and it establishes the Fire Nation for the first time. It's like, okay, there are people who are, it's not just all, you know, this nation of war-torn people.
Even the beginning of that episode where like they're at a festival and there's just Fire Nation civilians, like, you know, eating fireflakes and watching the show of, like, buskers. Mm-hmm. Like, it establishes that as a place. It establishes that not everybody who is in the Fire Nation is a genocidal maniac.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. And it gives the background for healing it also adds in the element of Aang having that guilt for having bowled ahead into something that he wasn't prepared for and hurt someone that he loved as a consequence of that. Like, that's a great episode, and I do feel bad that that had to be cut entirely.
Yeah, but I completely agree. You can't go off and do that. It just doesn't fit in the 8-hour window that they were given. So I completely
feels like a loss though. Like there are a lot of things that like it, and this is where I'm like it's super uneven because like,
yeah.
The second episode with Kyoshi Island.
Yes, and, the Kyoshi Warriors. I really like that episode. Yeah.
Very strong. You introduce this new character who is Suki's mother, who was like the previous generation Suki. Like she was mm-hmm. a Kyoshi warrior in her own regard. You have Kyoshi being the first avatar that Aang communes with, and we get that fucking awesome scene.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Of her bending every element and just wrecking shop. Like it was a very strong episode. And then to go into the next episode, which is the introduction to Omashu, and you're like, okay, well, what's going on in Omashu? We're going to cram Jet in there. We're going to cram the Mechanist in there.
Yeah, Danny Pudi, though. Yeah, Danny Pudi as the Mechanist, yeah.
Danny Pudi was fun, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember when that happened, I'm like, ooh, he's not supposed to be here. I guess we're playing this here. Yeah, and then the guy, Jet was there.
Cave and Two Lovers were there.
Yeah, and that was the thing. They played the song. Because I remember Carly was saying, because obviously that's my favorite thing in the history of Avatar, is the Secret Tunnel song in the Nomads episode. And I remember the wife was sitting there going, like, do you think they'll do it? And I'm like, well, probably not in season one, because, like, we don't go to, you know, they don't have to go back to Omashu until season two, and then it happened in, like, the third episode. She was like, you said it wasn't going to happen, so she and like, it was fun. I thought that reference was fun. They kind of didn't get, yeah, and then the cave, the bit where it was, like, they changed the, okay, two things that I thought were really bad in this show.
Okay.
One was the just literally reading the script explanation for where the Nomads like explained the tunnels and whatnot, and it's like that was bad. But even worse than that was, and this was the worst bit of acting in the show, and it didn't come from any of the kids. And this is when I started to get nervous during the first episode, which is the lady who played Gran-Gran, when she literally just starts. Reading, she oh. literally just starts doing the open. Yeah, the opening dialogue from every episode of Avatar, but it's like it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be like a fun introduction to the show, like it is in the animated series. It's literally her doing a lore dump, but she was also reading it so terribly and stiffly, and it was just like, oh, that was I. Was like, oh no, as that was happening, I was like,
I feel like that. I mean, there's that, and there's other bits of fan service that they put in because, like, Ace and I were literally reciting that scene as she was saying it because, of course, you know, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
Yeah, but for her to say it as, like, but, like, she also had, like, a bit of a Canadian. Yeah, when the world needed him most, he disappeared. And it was like, oh my god, what is happening, right? We're really doing this?
Dangerous run and out of America.
Yeah, oh god, it was bad. That was when I started to get nervous for the show. My god, this is going to be the two that everybody was saying it was online and stuff. And then as it went on, I was like, no, it's fine. That was just,
but
you know.
My brain is tuned for that sort of stuff, man. Like, as soon as they entered the cave and I heard the down, take it down, take it down, take it down. Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm like, they're here, but that...
Like, it's happening.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. That third episode, as much as I did kind of like it, you're right, they did jam a lot into that one episode.
Well, speaking of fan service, and I'm gonna move swiftly on, because there's a lot to this.
Yeah, oh, let's keep going, yeah.
Speaking of fan service, let's skip to the fourth episode. How did you like all the Lieutenant, Uncle Iroh, Zuko stuff?
I did like it. Well, first off, I just want to say Ken Leong as Commander Zhao in this movie, no pun intended, or in the show, no pun intended, throwing heat, like absolutely throwing heat as Commander Zhao. Anytime he was on the screen, and I know Zhao's like a terrible, like reputable character, but anytime he was on the screen, I'm like, ooh, something's about to happen because Ken Leong's here. I liked it. I thought they had their dynamic. The only thing I bumped into, as much love as we gave the costume designer, and I don't think we fully gave our props, but I really liked the costume designs in this. Like especially the Water Tribe. I really think those outfits look like the part. The Fire Nation guy outfits, I think, look great. When we got to Omashu and all the Earthbenders and the green and stuff, I thought that all looked really great.
Yep.
I bumped
into. I think that, I mean, if we can talk like very specific details.
Yeah.
Kiyoshi and Suki's makeup was fucking excellent.
Yes, the Kiyoshi warriors look fucking badass in this.
Yeah,
that was
like these gold accents in the corner of her eyes, and I'm like, oh
yeah,
it sings. I'm not a makeup guy, but holy shit.
That was probably the best episode, if we're being wire to wire, the best episode I think is probably the when they go to Kiyoshi Island and meet the warriors. And that's the episode they shot. You can tell they shot outside a little bit, which made that episode really good. I mean, some of it shot, obviously all the Avatar Kiyoshi stuff was shot in front of a green screen, but most of the stuff of them being on Kiyoshi Island, that was clearly outside, whereas the rest of the show is a little bit green screen and set driven, not to like a detriment, but like just noticeable.
I'll say, a lot of the establishing shots of, like, locations that they did, you know, entirely CG looked very good.
Yeah, I saw people ripping on the CG.
On, like, you have, like, the Southern Air Temple, like, these, like, wide shots of Omashu. I'm like, all right, looks pretty dope.
Yeah, and I saw people ripping on the CG, and I gotta say, I strongly disagree. I thought the CG in this was quite passable. Like, stuff like Appa didn't look like garbage, right? Like, Appa and Momo didn't look like garbage. They looked fine and real enough in the show. And that those are, like, animal, weird-looking CG animals that the characters have to interact with and pretend to ride in Appa's case. So, that worked. I will say, I bumped into...
I have a guess. I even know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Two things. One, I bumped into Paul Sung. I bumped into Paul Lee's Uncle Iroh beard, where you can see the lacing on the beard.
Listen, let's talk about this in general because I feel like as good as the costumes were, and we're gonna give them the props every time that we have an opportunity. The hair and makeup was real spotty.
As good as she was.
Especially the old age makeup.
Yeah. But even beyond that, as good as she was, and as much as I love her and will continue to defend her going forward, what they did to my girl Amber Midthunder with that Princess Yue wig was unforgivable. Like, I don't know if she upset the wig department, but that was not good, what was happening there. And I'm sitting there going, this is Amber Midthunder. She's so awesome. She's in Prey, which is fucking awesome. She's great in it. I highly recommend that movie to everybody. She was still good in this. I enjoyed it very much. But that wig was undeniably bad. Like, it was distractingly terrible. Although,
you know, so I don't know if it was the costuming. I don't know if it's, like, her coloration or her eyes or something like that. But... And correct me if I'm wrong on this, because you know more about these folks than I do, but with that, like, white silver wig, I was getting, like, a Kylie Jenner thing.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't pay much attention to the Kardashians at all, either. I find them... I find them to be quite repug.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, it was not great, is what I would say. That was...
Like, I mean, we can talk about King Bumi, who they changed the characterization of, but while we're still on this topic, I went to go look him up because I'm like, this guy seems like he's played a Ferengi before on Star Trek. Like, he just has that mannerism.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wonder who it is, and I look it up, and I'm like, oh my god, it's friggin' Utkarsh Ambedkar.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's like in his mid-30s and he's playing a 112-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. He got the mannerisms of King Bumi down, but yeah, the makeup on him, his hair looked all right, but the old guy makeup they had on his face was...
Yeah.
Not a swing and a miss, but like foul tip into the glove, you know? Like, it wasn't like they didn't come up with air, but it was still an out, right? Like, it was
for sure.
It was one of those things.
Yeah, and the mannerisms were a little weird to me because you got like the King Bumi sort of like, I'm gonna make a joke every now and then, but he just seemed really salty.
He was
like, oh my
during God. The fight, yeah, it wasn't as wimpy. Yeah, he didn't have that whimsy, right? Yeah, that boom
he
has.
I didn't seem happy to see, like, his best friend from 100 years ago either. Like, I understand that they're going with this tack of, like, you know, he is someone who has experienced, like, literally from day one, the entirety of this war, and that how that wears a person down. And, you know, I get it, but we kind of are to assume that that's kind of what cracks Boomy in the original a little bit. And here he just seems angry. And one of my biggest beats of this show is that, to bring it all the way back to the beginning, they do get on Aang's case a lot as someone who, like, abandoned his responsibility. But that isn't the way that they portrayed it. He's someone who went for to clear his mind and then
That's a big one. Yeah, like, that's
like,
a big one.
For him to never be like, you know, listen, it sucks and I'm sorry, but it wasn't my fault.
There's no reason this version of Aang should have any guilt for what happened, right?
Thing,
yeah.
The only thing that we get that makes sense is that Aang is very much like the I don't want to have to fight. To abandon my peaceful monk ways in order to save the world, and that's sort of the conflict he's running up against, and that makes sense to me.
Yes.
But to have it be like, but to lose the original series sort of motivation of, and the guilt that comes with the, I was told too young that I was the Avatar because we were on the brink of war, I ran away from home, and as a result of my selfish and you know, regardless of whether it's justified, it is justified. He's a kid. But, you know, because of my rash behavior, you know, we basically, I disappeared for 100 years. And whether or not that's a good thing is probably there, because if he had been at the Air Temple when they got raided on Sozin's Comet, he would have goddamn died. Avatar not. He was 10 years old. He didn't know any bending other than air. Like, ultimately, it was needed to happen, but, like, it's such a huge part of his character, and to sort of hand wave and to sort of make that not be his motivation, but then also play like it was, is real weird to me.
Like, yeah, that was a mess. Yeah, that was a swing and a miss for sure. And that's you just laid out. That's the main thing that people who were hardcore die in the wool Avatar: The Last Airbender fans, they really bumped into that.
I think it's my biggest
beef. Which I agree with. I was able to get past it, but if you weren't fully able to get past that and that ruined your experience, I can't say I blame you, but I just don't think that
it didn't ruin my experience. It's like the first scene, right?
Yeah.
It kind of set the tone for me of like, oh, okay, interesting.
You're not gonna go
with one of the main motivational things for the main character, huh?
It was that I bumped into a little bit, but I feel like you're right though. They came back around at it with him being like, oh, I don't want to necessarily just, you know, give up my monk leanings, but it definitely is like, there's no reason for him to feel any kind of guilt for technically, abandoning the, you know, the monks and whatnot. Right. Like, cause he didn't, right. He was just like, well, but let me go think this through. And then, oops, there's a storm. Dang it, trapped for 100 years. Crap, right? Like,
yep.
That I bumped into a little bit, but it wasn't a complete... That, I think, was the biggest change they made. I was able to get past it, but I can understand if some of the more hardcore people... But I would say those are the two big things that I bumped into, were that and then the Fire Lord Ozai and Zuko scene that I mentioned earlier. A lot of their dynamic was a bit left of center, with him seemingly being like, dude, I'm trying to set you up so you can beat your sister, right? Like, it's just like, what is happening right now?
Yeah,
or it's like,
that's a bit of an interesting dynamic too. I actually don't mind that as a change, where if you're going to introduce Azula in season one, it does very much feel like the motivation for both of them now is that they are both being abused by their shitty dad, who is effectively pitting them against each other to compete for his affection and his...
he wants to see them both fighting for his parents' love! Fight, 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 fight!
Exactly, yeah. So she's just gonna swing her arms like this, and if he happens to get hit, it's his own fault. But, so like, I don't mind that as a motivation. Because really, we didn't have that up until now. I haven't, like, we basically had, I mean, we basically have Zuko with his daddy issues, which make him a people pleaser, and Azula with his with her mommy issues that makes her a sociopath. Right?
Yeah.
So she's got both now, and it'll be interesting to see how that sort of develops. Like, I'm okay with a less mean Azula if it comes with a little bit of understanding that she is also grappling with the expectations and the weight of the world being put on her by her shitty dad.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with that. This might end up being... I don't think it should end this way, necessarily, but people have been calling for the Azula redemption arc for a long time, and my understanding is some thought was given to it in, like, the comics, but that I haven't read.
Yeah.
But it might be interesting to see how that character continues to develop, because obviously they're changing the way that she's being introduced, and you know, and by the time we get her in season two, she's gonna be the Azula that we remember being introduced in season two, where she already can do the blue fire, she already can do the lightning, and now she's on a mission from Dad.
Yeah, and we see her take over Omashu at the end, which is something that happens off screen in the show. Right after the end of the episode of the Nomads. No, I didn't mind that at all. I thought that was fun. Yes, I thought that was very fun. Because I was wondering if we were going to get like a Toph tease for season two, like a PS scene, but instead it was like the comet's coming, and I was like, oh,
you know what?
Cool.
Actually, I thought that they did something like that, because there was a they had the episode where they were lost in the spirit world. And they kind of did it like the swamp episode.
Yes, and George Takei did the voice of the faceless slug thing. That was dope. That thing I thought looked really. Yeah, it was George Takei was doing the voice of it, if I remember correctly, of the faceless the face stealer. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Takei.
I'm looking that up because that's crazy. I didn't recognize that.
Yeah, but
well, it was wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. First of all, that was creepy as hell. Loved it.
Yeah, because that was one of those things. Like, I remember watching the because there's always these things that happen in kid shows where you're like, wow, I can't believe they got away with that. That's fucking frightening. And one of those things was the face stealer.
Even more, right? Like
the face stealer slug centipede thing even in the original animated series. I was like, how are they getting away with this in a kids show? And then you think about stuff that happened you know, like traumatizing moments in kid scenes from our youth, like the All Dogs Go to Heaven when they go to like dog hell and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like, how did they get away with that? You know, or like anything from Watership Down, right? Like, fuck.
Well, I mean, it's a change that I think makes more sense than keeping the original stuff in, right? Because the episode where Aang has to go and, you know, he ends up getting captured by the Blue Spirit because he's by himself, or by Zhao, and getting rescued by the Blue Spirit because he's by himself. Number one, you know, it happened this time because he was trying to free his friends from the spirit world and not because they were sick and he needed frozen frogs for them to suck on, which makes a little bit more sense if you're trying to keep it tight.
Yeah.
we lose out on the classic line, take that, you rock. But on the other hand, you know, it makes a little bit more sense. We get a full episode of Ko, and to harken back quickly to what I was saying about like the swamp episode, is when Katara's lost in the spirit world, she ends up like hearing a little girl laughing, and we're like, oh my god, is it gonna be Toph?
Yeah, maybe it was. I don't know.
But also, while we're talking about it, I love that they basically did a live action shot for shot remake of the escape from the fortress with the Blue Spirit, including like, we're gonna use these giant ladders as still scene. I'm like, really? They're doing that, huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They did a few things. Like, well, the last episode of this series of this show is basically shot for shot, beat for beat, the last episode of season one of the animated series too, right? With the fight at the Northern Water.
Every time, any time a line was basically brought in directly from the cartoon, Ace and I would be reciting it, like screaming it. And like when Iroh is like, Zhao, whatever you do to that fish, I will visit on you tenfold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did Ace feel about this as like the younger let's poll the younger audience as to how they felt about this show.
So her take was that there were some things that she really likes just seeing it in live action.
Yeah.
Which is helpful. However, I think she is at that age where, again, like the same way that you mentioned, like, you know, if we were younger, maybe we'd be more belligerent about how they do
yeah.
childhood. And for her, like, this is the first show that we really watched together when she was 9 years old. And anytime they change something, she'd be like, no! it's not a perfect shot for shot remake. Like, she would
yeah.
come up against it, right?
Yeah, and, you'd be like, what? Know, we're. Like, it's like, what?
The talk about it, and I'd be like, well, yeah. they changed this, and they're like, you know, like, here's why I think they did it, and here's why I think some of these changes are for the better. And, you know, so, and this is why it's like I've already kind of podcasted about it with her, so this, because we've discussed, like, you know, here are the changes they've made, here's why they made them, here's some changes they made that I don't agree with. I mean, we're both like, you know, we liked it overall, and we're looking forward to a second season, knowing that, you know, a second season presumably will take like a year or two to actually happen, and hoping that we can iron out some of the kinks, right?
Yeah. The clip of them on this, all on the Zoom call, finding like all the actors finding out that they got renewed was pretty wholesome. All the kids being fun. Like, "Oh, great!" Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Also, you need to put Daniel Day Kim in every Avatar project that's ever existed, please.
Yeah,
because he's like, I recognize his voice. I'm like, yeah, he was Hiroshi Sato in Korra.
Yeah. He is very sad.
That guy. Finding out George Takei was Ko is a big reveal for me.
And the Ko thing looked fucking creepy in this too. Like, it looks creepy. The anime series. Like, yeah, and I watched one of my other favorite episodes recently because Carly and I were rewatching the animated series in anticipation for this, and then we think we're finally going to take on Korra because I've never actually got through Korra. Like only a few episodes in the first season because it was airing like week to week and I was watching it week to week from back in the day, and I just completely fell off and never got back to it. I just remember
if you guys remember
Faustino was a voice of one of the main characters in it.
Yeah, he was
Bud Bundy. Yeah, Bud Bundy was one of the main guys.
That show rules, by the way. Like, it has its down points for sure, but, like, in my estimation, I think season 3 of Korra is the best season of Avatar.
High praise. All right. We'll probably check it out. Yeah, I just watched the Bloodbender episode, which, damn, that's a good episode of Avatar. The Puppet Master, I think it was called. So good.
Yeah.
We have not properly given any flowers to Kai Wintio, who played Katara, and Ian Ousley, who played Sokka, and I thought they were supremely cast because they both looked the part, like you couldn't believe. Like it looked like they got just like pulled off the page. She was better than him, I gotta say, but. They're both kids, right? Like they're both youngsters.
They gave him the Sokka-ness of it all.
Yeah,
I appreciated. Like I feel their writing of Sokka was spot on. I don't know that he necessarily acted the best at all times, but he was fine.
Yeah, I thought he got there in the scene when he heard. When Ko had them reliving their worst moments or whatever.
Yeah, he overheard that and Bato of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, and he overheard his dad say, like, how bad he was and that he basically nepo-babied him through the trial or whatever. Yeah. And then he broke down and started crying. I thought he got there in that scene. That scene, I popped for that scene a little bit in the emotional sort of way. Hey, that was really good. I thought he got there in that scene, but, you know, there were some other ones where I was like, this is not, it's not great, but... He wasn't like he certainly wasn't a detriment to the show. I thought he looked fun. He got there in the scenes with him and Kiyoshi. Didn't quite get there with Amber Mid Thunder, but that's for some reason. And they don't want to take the time to give that anything in the show. I was happy they didn't make them romantically linked, kind of, in this one. Like, it was less romantically linked than it was in the animated series, whereas the biggest miss, in a movie full of misses, the biggest miss of Avatar The Last Airbender, the Shyamalan one, was they give the one-off kiss line where it's like, and Princess Yue became very infatuated with Sokka. And then a scene later, she's like giving him a soliloquy about, don't worry, it sucks that I'll die. And then he's supposed to be crying. And it's like, we don't even know you, right? Like, it's like you've not earned this big emotional, you know, death monologue. I'm about to sacrifice myself monologue here. So yeah,
I will say
legitimately
that,
yeah, the worst part of a bad movie is the Princess Yue monologue.
Your notion earlier that, you know, there's always a thing that you can name as a good thing out of a bad movie.
Yeah.
Is that she ends up being, that the actress who plays Yue in that movie, Seychelle Gabriel, I think is her name. She ends up being a voice actor in Korra.
Oh, cool. Good for her.
Yeah, so, and to speak on the UA of it all briefly, I think that the disservice that is kind of done, and this is one of the changes that I think is poor, and I'm going to wrap it back to sort of the portrayal of Katara this season. I don't think that they give her enough to do, and I feel like it's because there are a lot of changes that sort of strip away her development over season one, such as not introducing the healing mid-season. And kind of having her not be like, I understand that they're trying to do, they've even like gone on record saying like, we don't want to introduce like Sokka's a sexist at the beginning.
Yeah.
We don't want to introduce that Katara is like this very nurturing motherly type of character. And I think that's a disservice to that character because that's who she is. And it doesn't stop her in the animated series from also being a badass. Where here it's like, okay, she's not a nurturing motherly character. She doesn't learn healing until the end. We see her picking up waterbending through the waterbending scroll as we go and practicing on her own, which is cool, and kind of developing her own moves that we, you know, see in that fight versus Paku, which is pretty cool at the end. But to also not even mention the betrothal necklace and therefore not have Yue be engaged to Han and therefore not have it be this sort of forbidden romance, like they really cut a lot out, and I feel like with a little bit of that, like it doesn't require a ton of explanation to just have it there. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of those things that I'm talking about where like they make a change to either make what was already there convoluted or to make something worse by excluding it, and it just, I don't understand the rationale behind it.
Like, yeah, the guy they had playing Paku, that bald cap they got him was pretty bad too.
But yeah, for sure. And that was like a lot of the old age.
That was a mess.
Really,
yeah.
Rough, like Fumi and Gyatso looked okay, but I think Soji looked kind of rough. Iroh looked like you mentioned had the shitty wig.
Yeah. You can see the lace in his beard. It was bad. In certain scenes, but yeah, it's just. Yeah, certain things, you know, were working and certain things were not. But like I said, I think the good outweighs the bad in this one.
I think so too.
I thought Gordon Cormier got there as Aang in this for most of it. Some of his lines are delivered with a. It's very noticeable that he's 12 years old when they shot this, but. Again, not going to take him to task, because he gets there in some scenes and he doesn't get there in others. It's a show where they are filming 12 and 13 year olds at the time.
And the look is there. If you fed cartoon Aang into an AI that made this live action, that's who it would be.
Absolutely. It is supremely cast, I got to say. There's nobody who, in this show, there's nobody who they cast where I'm like, boy, that is way off base, right? Like, who they got there. It's a supremely well-cast show in terms of look.
It's interesting, like, attention to detail on, like, some really minor characters, too, right? Like, to the point where, like, you have Teo, who's got, like, those hexagonal-shaped goggles. Like, okay, that, like, they kept that. Like, that's very specific, but I like that they went there. They have Lieutenant G, who I don't think was even named in the
with cartoon, the chops.
But he's got the chops.
Yeah, that guy's great too. What's his name? Rui Iskandar, I think is his name, and he's in a bunch of stuff. I think he's in that. He's really good. I like him. He was in like Gotham and stuff, and a couple other of those shows. He pops up in a bunch of stuff. But he's one of those guys who when you see him, you're like, ooh, this is gonna be fun, right? You know, he's one of those kind of character actors where he shows up and you're just immediately like, ooh, I love this guy, right?
A lot to enjoy. Like you understand that the people who made this are fans of the show, and I feel like that shines through, and ultimately that makes it less of a. A slog than a Last Airbender movie and that Shyamalan. Like it's fun in a way that I like. I don't necessarily agree with all the changes, but I do think that it errs on the more positive side for me. To the point where like, you know, am I gonna watch it as often as I watch the animated? Absolutely not. But you know, is it a great companion? Sure. And I'm excited for season two.
Yeah, and they got the, like I would say they got there in episodes like the Warriors, the Kyoshi Warriors episode, really good, wire to wire.
Excellent.
The last episode I liked, now the last episode, like we said, there's a lot to like because it is basically beat for beat the final episode of season one, so if you didn't like that, then you're not going to like the rest of it because they literally just did it beat for beat.
Can I tell you what scene in the last episode got a laugh from me that probably didn't intend to?
Oh, a little unintentional comedy there. Go ahead.
The slow motion Momo gets hit by a boulder after saving somebody.
Oh yeah.
And like has a dramatic death scene.
Yeah, that was Carly, obviously my wife, who like cannot handle when animals get hurt in shows, was like, "What the hell is happening?" Right? Because obviously that never happened in the animated series, right?
Because like, no, Momo, my one true love.
Yeah, and he's like doing that scene. I was like, oh, my wife was like looking at me like, I swear to God, if Momo dies, like I will. Like, I'm like, wait, what for me? I didn't write the fucking show. Right?
Made A just burst out laughing, and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, it was a bit like,
bring the drama for this episode, really?
Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm like, oh, and I'm like, they're not going to kill Momo, this is going to be the impetus for them taking him to the thing, and that's how, Commander Zhao is going to find the spirit of the moon, right? And, and he's going to be the moon slayer, right? And like, oh, God, it was... That was pretty funny though. Like, and I've heard people like completely rip on that, and I'm like, whatever, man. Like, it was a choice, but it was silly, and it was a choice, but like, it was a somewhat non-convoluted way of them getting into that room, right? Like, it was just, you know, like it just wasn't like, hey, we're here, right? Like, it was like they found a decent way, and sure, they had to kind of play with it. It was a little emotionally manipulative, but whatever.
I really like the opening to that last episode, too, like the cold open where it shows like Aang, Katara, and Sokka all taking down like the Fire Nation ship and then realizing
there's
1,000 left. The decision to have them take part in stuff that like Aang almost only did by himself, I thought was really strong. Especially because at that point, like, Paku had not consented to train Katara, and to have the little bits that came out of that, like, they changed some stuff with the order of what was happening there, but I feel like that is when we got our strongest Katara moments. Like, we have her fighting Zuko, and he did the line, like, you little peasant, you found a master, haven't you? And she's like, I'm my own master. I thought that was pretty good, and then to have all the other like healers show up and be like, "We're gonna fight now too."
Yeah,
it felt very good, too. You know, and it wasn't the same as it was in the series, but it felt like it was. You know, water is the element of change, and we're gonna show you how. You know, just because we've always done it this way doesn't mean it's the best way, especially when we're facing eradication. Like,
It's good.
Those are changes I liked. You know.
Yeah, people ripped on, like I said, people kind of ripped on this, but even they were kind of like, Yeah, finale was pretty good though, right? Like the finale was, it was a strong finale, and they set up, it was a pretty strong finale. And, you know, Azula, at the end, you see Azula take over Omashu, like we said, and then you assume next season it's going to be, you know, you're going to get Toph, and you're going to get the cool stuff with the Earthbenders, and we'll get to go to Ba Sing Se, and, you know, it'll be decent. It'll be fun.
I will tell you the one thing that I hope to see out of this first episode of season two. Throughout this season, there was sort of a reticence of Aang to even try other types of bending.
Yeah.
That he didn't have in the main. Like, he does not bend a drop of water in this season. Like,
no, yeah, until he goes into the Avatar state, right?
Until he becomes the ocean spirit.
But
I think that the first episode of season two of the animated is him basically being forced by a Daniel Day-Kim character, interestingly enough, to try to enter the Avatar state and basically defeat the Fire Lord now. And I think that that's an interesting episode. As mentioned earlier, I think it's the first episode of a show that I ever saw. But also, I think it would be interesting to have him sort of address, like, what his hang-up is and sort of overcome that. Because, you know, he's going to need to do it. And the fact that he didn't do it at all in this season struck me as a little odd.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't there a scene where him and Katara are in like a riverbank, kind of moving water together?
Did they do that, or did I
make that up in my head?
so she's doing it, and yeah. I think she was like, "Why don't you give it a try?" And he's like, "Oh no, I'll try later." Like he literally says that, and he never does.
And so
I thought it was like a character choice of like, you know, they're gonna have this version of Aang because he's kind of hung up on being non-violent, that he doesn't even want to sort of get into the other bending. In sort of the same way where in the Deserter, after he burns Katara, he's like, I'll never fire bend again.
Yeah, but that makes sense, because he burned the woman, the girl he's in love with, right? So.
But he hasn't straight up come out and said it, and so I kind of wanted to be some, like, you know, inner turmoil of the soul type of conversation that he has with himself early in the next season.
Yeah,
because I don't know how much of a time skip there's going to be. But, you know, he's not going to be 12 years old when he's acting in a season 2 years from now, right?
No, but, I mean, they'll just have to play around with that. Because I would imagine they're probably just going to shoot seasons 2 and 3 at the exact same time. And then they'll...
That's my guess.
Yeah, they'll release them after the other.
Like, the change that they made where they kind of... Again, and it was another PS scene where they introduced, like, oh, Zosin's Comet is returning. They didn't put a timeline on it, whereas in the cartoon, it's like, oh, by the end of summer, like, you know, you're going to have to learn all the elements to defeat the Fire Lord.
The solstice. A lot of solstice talk. They're big on the solstices in the Avatar universe.
Yeah, of course. You know, that they do that in the animated because you don't have to worry about characters aging out. You can have the whole thing shot over the course of a couple months. You can't do that with live action. So I really feel like they might do a... You know, Zosin's Comet's returning, and it's going to be here in 2 years, you know? And then shoot the next two seasons, and, you know, maybe when we come back for season two, they've been spending, like, 6 months in the Northern Water Tribe, and he's picked up waterbending, and Katara's a master, and, you know...
Yeah, you can explain that. You can explain that away with a line in...
Exactly. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way they go, but But the fact that he didn't waterbend at all in the season felt a little odd to me, and I do feel like they have to at least pay us some lip service.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I, unlike what seems like most of the world, am somewhat excited for this. This just brings me to a thing. I don't know. There was a lot of discourse about, you know, certain things should just be left animated, and I'm like, maybe there's some truth to that, but. Because I don't think there should be a live-action SpongeBob. I think that would be fucking weird. But I don't know. I'm fine with this existing. I really am. I truly am. I'm fine with this. I think
it's not so excellent that I'm like, you know, you have to watch it. But like,
no, you're never gonna. Yeah.
Companion piece for the main series.
Yes, and that's ultimately what it is, right? Is you're never gonna say to some. You might say to someone, "Oh man, you really need to watch Avatar because it's really like the animated series because it's really good." But you're never gonna say that about this, which ultimately, yeah. I don't know if that's like a failing or whatever. But I agree. It's just a fun companion piece, and it's
the most just, I can say is the opposite, and I think that would be the good thing, right? Like if you have never seen anything Avatar before and you like this series, then go back and watch the original. You'll probably like it a lot. And then you know, trying to get hung up on it is a, you know, 4:3 aspect ratio pre high definition animated show from the mid aughts. Like, I mean, you know, depending on your age, that might be a turnoff for you, but you know, it is a fantastic show. I've been watching it on and off for the last 20 years.
It's a great one.
Would always recommend.
Yeah, it's a great one.
I'm excited for you guys to be watching Korra. I will absolutely do podcasts about that if you tell me
about. yeah, we'll see. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up about this show? I thought it was dope when they did the Avatar Roku episode, when he's got to go, when they did the fire, where he had to go to the Fire Nation for the first time. Yep. And the mages had all turned except for the one guy who fights them off. That was, they nailed that, I thought.
That was pretty good. I mean, as much as you can, right? Like, obviously they weren't going to make a whole episode of it like they did the first time around, but I mean, that understandably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm totally fine with that.
Right. Yeah. Anything you wanted to add about the show, or you felt that we missed? It's just a lot of fun. A lot of fun stuff. I mean, like I said, it was supremely cast.
It's always nice to see more Airbender stuff, honestly. And so having that opening scenes where we actually get to see Airbenders fighting off Firebenders, I thought was pretty cool.
That was fun interpretation.
Was fun.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking forward to is that we've had Aang kind of commune with more avatars than he ever really did in the animated until like the final episode,
Avatar Kurik, the rarely used Avatar Kurik got he got a lot of screen time in this show.
Exactly.
I like that.
And I'm looking forward to more Yang Chen as well.
Yeah,
and where that would tie in nicely is, I think either, I don't remember what the timeline is on this, if this has been released, but much of the way that they had sort of, they mentioned some things about Kyoshi in this series that is actually canon from Kyoshi novels that have been introduced since.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, they're talking about, like, her past and how she had humble beginnings and that how she became this powerful warrior, etc. And that's all from like novels that came out in like 2018 or something like that, I want to say. And there are Yang Shen novels that are either came out recently or are coming out soon. I don't know what the timeline on that is, but to draw some of that back in as well, I think would be pretty cool.
Yeah, we should mention
the flavor of it.
Yeah, we should mention, and you can agree or disagree with me on this, but I thought the bending actually looked good in this series, like a lot of it's CG, but I thought and sometimes the guys are doing like slow movements and stuff in the earth bending because the earth bending stuff, but for the most part it looked great among all five of the the fifth element among all four of the elements that they had bending in this, whereas one of the biggest complaints of, again, not to just the it's catching a lot of strays, the Shyamalan, but like that was one of the biggest things. Is the bending looked like shit in the Shyamalan universe, and he changed the rules on like a bunch of the stuff. Like the Firebenders needed fire in order to bend it, and so like, it was strange. But in this, it was like
I think it looked
dope.
A good balance in this of in a cartoon, like, all the imagery is super high contrast because everything is brightly colored and has a black outline on it. So you're able to do very quick martial arts scenes that include these elements and have them read. Whereas I think if you did the same speed in live action, it would be really choppy and kind of hard to follow. you see this sometimes in like action movies where they're literally fighting a bunch of guys in the dark and you're like, I have no idea what the hell's going on. It's just like, you know, actually, like, or like, you know, what people always said about like the Michael Bay Transformers movies is just like, okay, everything is so hyper detailed and happening so fast. I just see a bunch of mechanical parts crashing into each other.
It just looks like two junkyards having sex with each other.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a good balance of making the bending look powerful and fast without being so fast as to be unintelligible. So that's my take. I think that they hit that pretty well. I could do with a little bit more grandeur, and I think that we're likely to get that in later seasons, right? It's like a power creep thing where you can show, you know, later on, you know, people doing these huge feats of bending where they are, you know, causing like huge tidal waves or hurricanes or, you know, any of the big stuff that like Toph does in season two. And then in season three to have it be like the ultimate of like, oh, so this comet is here and we're gonna have flamethrowers that are burning down the countryside. Like, it's okay to have it seem a little underpowered now because we know it's gonna get stronger later and it's just gonna raise the stakes, and that's what you want for a television show like this.
I am going to be I'm going to be what I think is somewhat generous to this show. I liked it. I am excited for a season two. I'm glad they didn't like shit can it or anything, because I don't think it deserved the hate that it got. I'm gonna go a soft seven on this. A very soft seven. So it's like a seven teetering on a 6.5. But I still liked it and would watch again. How about you?
I'm going to go with a pretty solid seven.
Okay. You're going with a hard seven.
Because I have my issues with it, but I see the potential. And I see the potential, and what I'm excited for is a season two that helps solidify that, right? Because if we can get a season two that is strong and is building off some of the stuff that they've started here in season one, it's one of those things where the sequels sometimes make you appreciate the original more. Like, for example, I think Mass Effect 2 makes me like Mass Effect 1 more because your decisions in it actually matter in a way that you didn't realize at first. And to have that pay off in a way that I think that there is enough attention to detail and enough love for the source material that I could see it happening. And I would really love to come into a season 2 like a year and a half or 2 years from now that is like an 8 or an 8.5 and we can genuinely be happy with, right?
Yeah,
that's how I feel.
Yeah. So you're going hard seven, and I'm going seven.
Seven, cautiously optimistic for eight in season two.
Yeah, your seven is hard, and my seven had a little bit too much to drink and can't quite get there. it's a whiskey seven. So Avatar Netflix. Favorably reviewed by the Crossover Podcast, which is not getting a lot out there from what I've seen. Again, I think people are being... I see the stuff out there, and I get what people are saying. I think they're being too fucking harsh on this. Like, if something is bad, I'll come out and say it. I haven't gone to see Madam Web yet, nor do I plan on. No. But, my God in heaven. I
the movie.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Anyway, that is it for this episode. Crossover Podcast, available at thecrossoverpodcast.com, facebook.com/crossoverpodcast, and iTunes. Please rate and subscribe. 5 stars only. We're also on Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. And we're not on Stitcher anymore, are we? Because Stitcher no longer exists. But we're on. We're on pretty much any other podcatcher that happens to be out there. And if we're not, email us at contact@thecrossoverpodcast.com and let us know, and we'll get ourselves up on there. And as always, you don't have to listen, but please listen, or please download the Crossover Podcast. That'll be it for this week. And I'll be back next week or the week after with a double feature. But we're going to be doing baseball with Craig. Over the next week or two. Yeah, baseball. Craig and I got our fantasy baseball draft coming up on St. Patrick's Day. So we're going to be baseball starting early this year, starting in March. So we'll be back with Craig in the next couple of weeks. If you're tuning into this feed, you'd be like, hey, where's my fucking gambling advice? Well, it's coming. So, all right. So, Kevin, as always, great to do this with you. Take care, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time on the Crossover Podcast.